Welcome to episode 8 of the Leverage Podcast. I'm here with a good friend of mine named Amir. He's the founder of Equimetrics, later sold his portion of that company for a huge amount. The guy has a ton of amazing business ideas, how to start a business, why you should start a business, why not to start a business, and he's going to give us some great insights and training into this. This talk actually took place at the Complete Man Workshop, which is an event offered in the Leverage program. And there's some really great questions to come at the end as well. So enjoy.
Thanks. So I guess maybe I'll start just by telling you a little bit about my background, filling in the holes about what Robbie mentioned. So I've always been interested in business. From a young age, I was always around, you know, family members that were entrepreneurs and, you know, all different types of businesses. I started my first company while I was in college, a small little tech business that I sold for $40,000. It's kind of funny. It was a tool for being able to pull information off MySpace and Facebook for political campaigns to see like what kind of people your followers are for someone running for office. I sold it to a consulting company. After that, I had a couple of other startups in college that didn't go so well. But, you know, all of them were learning experiences. The kind of breakout success that I had was a company called Equimetrics. I invented some technology while I was in school for high-frequency trading, which, if you don't know what that is, or often called algorithmic trading or programmatic trading, it's basically where you program a computer to make trading decisions. What to buy, when to buy, how much to buy, and when to sell it across all different asset classes. So invented that stuff, got the patents for it, 18 patents for it, raised for that company about $15 million at a college with two friends, moved to New York, built the company. At the height of it, I think we had about 45 developers, offices in four countries. Some of the biggest banks use that technology to trade. Goldman Sachs has our software built into their trading platform, which is called Ready Plus. UBS, Interactive Brokers was our biggest customer, which is a retail trading platform. About a year and a half before we sold the company, I was the CEO of the company. I was running pretty much everything. I decided to leave the company. It was becoming really boring for me and corporate and whatever, so I kind of stepped back, started doing consulting and investing in startups and working on startups. I helped grow a telemedicine business in the healthcare sector. I'm also on the board of directors of a pharmaceutical company, which is, you guys might have met Numan last night. He's the actual founder and CEO. It's the largest privately held pharma company in the world. They do about $850 million in revenue a year. And they specialize in cancer medicine. So completely different from like what I'm, my background is in, which is finance and technology. I have a degree both in both of those fields. I've seen a lot of different businesses. I've seen successful businesses, and I've learned a lot. I didn't know shit when I started, and all I did was surround myself with people who knew more than me. You know, find people who know more than you, and then listen to them. The second part is the most important, because a lot of people ask for advice, but they don't listen. So I think what got me to the point that I'm at a young age was listening. So I'll jump into this with starting with the idea of business in general. So I'm just going to, I wrote down some ideas that I thought were important to me, at least personally. Some of these things are opinions. Some of them are more facts. You know, people will have different opinions about business in general, of course. But feel free to ask questions or whatever at any time. So the idea of business, there was a post that I loved in the group that Maxwell brought up. It was amazing. He said, it was about money management, and he said something like, most people want to be millionaires when what they say they want to be millionaires or think they want to be millionaires, when in actuality what they want is to spend millions. Because these two things are completely different. It was like, oh, of course, like this is what I want to explain to people about, like, everything, like technology, business, whatever. It's like the thing you think you want is generally not the thing that you actually want to do. And business is exactly like that. And I don't know if it's maybe like not clear to everyone, like what Max was saying when he said, like, you know, you think you want to be a millionaire, but what you actually want is to spend millions of dollars. It's that a person who has millions of dollars doesn't think about what they're buying or what they're going to have or about material things. People who are rich are thinking about how to make more money. They don't have time to think about spending the money. You look at someone like Numan, who is by far probably the wealthiest person that was there last night, and he's the most unassuming person. He's the most, like, not materialistic. He's not talking about what he wants to buy because he doesn't have time to think about it. He's only thinking about how to grow his business and do things related to actually making more money. So, you know, think about what you actually want. It's really, really important. Some people want to start businesses because they think they're going to think they want to be the boss. Think they want to, you know, have really nice working hours, or you know, they want to be in control of what they're doing or whatever. And like, none of these things are real. Like, that doesn't work like that at all. You always have a boss. You're accountable to somebody. Whether it's your employees and their families and your investors and your customers, that shit keeps you up at night if you're running a business.
Or you're bored.
Yeah, you're like, bored. Obviously, you're bored. But my point is, you're always accountable to someone. If you're not accountable to anyone, it means you're not doing anything. Like, it's you know, there's a people who you have to start it for the right reason. So, by show of hands, how many of you guys want to or think you may want to at some point in your life own your own business?
I really want to. I feel like I really want to work for someone, like be like the first or second employee, like, mm-hmm. or you know, whatever.
Second founder. That's but, probably a smart thing to do.
Yeah, but I don't. But in doing that, I feel like I should also know how to start my own business, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really interesting to think about every single person in this room raise their hand. Like, isn't that weird? Like, what? No other country in the world would that be, like, normal? Like, where everybody's goal is to work for themselves. And not to single anyone out, but I'm sure that some of you want to do it because you think that entrepreneurship is good in and of itself. Or that, you know, you want any of those other things that I mentioned, like being your own boss or, like, you know, all these other things. And it's just not how it is, not how it's going to be. And you got to start a business. If you're starting a business, you have to start it for the right reasons. So I wanted to start this talk with kind of that preface. Most people shouldn't be starting businesses. Starting a business is not a good in and of itself. Entrepreneurship, the idea of it, is silly. Like you know, it's like you got to start a business when there's a need to start a business. That's it. Like, that's the there's only one acceptable reason to start a business, and that's to make money. Everything else is irrelevant. You start businesses to make money. There's no other, you know, benefit that comes out of it.
The most common, you know, thing that I see, at least in my world, is guys who want to, like, own their own clothing company.
Yeah.
Like, for, to, like, have this expression and, like,
vanity.
They're creating a business that is going to lose fucking money. Like, end of day. Like, they're just like, how are you going to differentiate yourself in the clothing market when there's like a million different fucking brands? Like, in streetwear, like, alone, it's obnoxious how many people are starting their own, like, label, and it's just a variation of a stupid logo. Like, it's not cool.
Exactly. And it's just vanity. So, so building on top of that, the only reason to start a business is to make money. There's really two directions you can go with. To make money, you can go after generating cash flow, you know, sell things for less than you can make them, or services that you can make them or whatever, or you can go after building enterprise value. So this is what we talk about when you see startups who are trying to get market share and this and that, and then they sell the company at an exit or eventually somehow become profitable or whatever. They're building enterprise value.
Could you go a little bit more into that? That doesn't really make much sense to me.
Okay, so the traditional notion of business is to make as much money as fast as possible. It's pretty simple. However, in, you know, I'd say in the past 50 years, starting with like, you know, it's really like a tech thing that came out of early, you know, Silicon Valley. You know, the first company that did this was like Fairchild Semiconductor or whatever, like that's why it's called Silicon Valley. You know, they raised money. They were people from the East Coast. Somebody gave them money to go fucking figure out how to build a fucking, you know, what's it called? Like a circuit board that eventually became the CPU of your computer. But they weren't going to make money for like a year or two because it's a fucking think tank. There's literally 10 PhDs from MIT sitting in a room for like 2 years figuring out... You want to close that? Figure out how to fucking do this, right? So like that flies in the face of every business concept ever. Like, so you guys are gonna sit in a room for 2 years and spend $2 million and think about maybe you can solve this problem, and if you can solve it, we're gonna become rich or whatever. So that's enterprise value. You're spending this money, you're doing all this stuff. And so, for example, my company, Equimetrics, it took us 2.5 years to build our software. People invested in us because they thought, okay, so here's it's a lottery ticket is what it is. It's like, if this works, we're going to make fucking X many times our money back. It's probably not going to work. But if it works, it'll be great. And that's not the traditional notion of business. And I would highly suggest that, like, unless you really understand what you're doing and why you're doing it, that's not the type of business that people should be starting.
Could I ask, to use an example, like, are a lot of the tech companies we see, like, that yes. don't really have revenue stream? Like,
yes. Snapchat also. If you don't have revenue stream, you fall into that category.
Okay.
Or else another business wouldn't stay open if it's not making money for more than 2 or 3 months. They should shut down and do something else or whatever. So the types of things you have to think about is, you know, after you've decided why you want to start this business. Actually, let me add another thing. I've met a lot of people who they just want to have a business. And so they go around looking for, like, I got to find something. I'm looking for something out there so that I can start this company that I've been wanting to start. And they probably have, like, what their office is going to look like already picked out before they have an idea of, like, what the company's going to do. Those people suck. Don't be one of those people. You're going to not make money, and you're going to cry. And whoever gives you money to start your business, whether it's your parents or your investors, are not going to like you. But then there's people like Newman and Jesse, and I think I'm in this category too, but we can use them as perfect examples. Jesse doesn't sit there thinking of ideas because he wants another business. It's more reactive, his idea generation, although he does come up with a lot of fucking ideas. Everything he sees is about making money. So if he sees something, it might inspire him, or he might see an opportunity. It's literally about looking for opportunities all the time. There's so many opportunities. It's not like one day you're going to get the call and it's like, all right, here's the idea you've been waiting for. There's ideas all around you. There's opportunities and things to take advantage of every day. You just have to have that mindset that you're looking to, you know, take advantage of money-making opportunities all the time. So you want to think about, why is this necessary? Why does this have to happen? Why do people need this? What are the advantages and disadvantages of being in that space? All the things you might consider before you actually want to do that. There's really only a couple of good reasons to do that idea. There's only a couple of measurements of a good idea. And there's stuff that you probably already know, like intuitively, but you probably never heard it in like a strict format. Questions like, does this make something cheaper? And cheaper is a really important word because it doesn't just mean dollar-wise cheaper. It means, does it take less time to do it? Is it in a format that like makes it more accessible? So another reason, another question like that is like, who can you give access to something? So for example, my company, what we did, we didn't invent like a whole new space. You never want to be the person to like invent something new because those people never make money. What we did was we took a method, a technology, a way of doing something and made it in a way that people who could never do this before now had access to it. What used to take lots of money, lots of developers and whatever turned into a piece of software that someone could operate. So that's an idea where it's like, okay, now we're giving accessibility to someone or making it cheaper still. At the end of the day, it boils down to like, did we make it cheaper? Yes, because they could have done it. We just made it more accessible. You want to stay away from areas you don't know about. It's really, really important.
So open that door.
If you don't know about technology, do not try to start a technology company, please. You will get crushed.
I can show you the failures of my own.
Yeah, you will get crushed. You know, just think about it. Every single person that you've heard about that... That had successful technology companies have hardcore technology backgrounds. I don't care if you like fucking Mark Zuckerberg or not. He's an amazing programmer. He's been programming since he was a kid. He fucking knows what he was doing. Bill Gates, fucking programming since he was a kid. All these people like Google, whatever. All these people have hardcore. Instagram, another perfect example. They always love to, because all these people like have non-formal educations in technology, and they'll say like, the founder of Instagram taught himself to program. That's true. He spent 2 years learning how to program on his own from books, which is actually how people learn how to program before computer science was even a thing. What they don't understand is that that guy has a master's degree from Stanford in symbolic logic, which is like abstract mathematics, which is essentially programming. He's actually probably a better programmer than like people who have computer science degrees. And on top of that, Instagram, actually the main reason it was successful is because they invented a new technology for sending images through the internet, which was why it was faster. Pictures would, just as an aside, to point out like why technology is important, technology companies, it's not about, you know, user adoption only, you know, like Instagram. If you guys remember the Facebook app on your phones, iPhone and Android, before they bought Instagram, do you remember how like it would fuck up sometimes when you wanted to upload pictures or it was really slow?
Yeah.
And then right after they bought them, it became fucking instant? Well, the reason why Facebook bought Instagram is that Instagram invented a really fast way of uploading pictures, which what it did was people started downloading Instagram to upload pictures to Facebook. A higher percentage of pictures were being uploaded to Facebook from Instagram, which forced Facebook to buy the technology. That's why it happened. It happened because they're really good programmers, and it's not because like filters are cool and your idea to have like a different color filter sucks balls and you're gonna lose and cry and not make any money. So don't do businesses that you don't know about. If you want to go into a new industry, that's fine, but take the time and diligence to go become an expert in that industry. Go learn about it. Give it the respect that it deserves, whatever it happens to be, and start with an empty cup. The same thing goes for asking for advice. I would talk to people all the time about, like, you know, just people I'd meet, and I'd be like, oh, this is what I'm doing. This is the trading technology that I'm building. And they'd be like, oh, that's so sick. That sounds so cool. Like, you guys are going to make so much money. Like, I love it. Like, it's like, oh, cool. Like, so do you trade stocks? Or like, no, I don't know what a fucking stock is, but like, that sounds like an awesome idea. Like, you should definitely do it. Like, cool story, bro. Like, whatever. Like, don't ask people who aren't fucking customers or people who might be customers or know about the industry to give you feedback. It's only gonna be detrimental. They're either gonna tell you it's a bad idea when it's a good idea, or they're gonna tell you it's a good idea when it's a terrible idea. You need to ask people who know, who would be customers, who are experts in that field, and again, listen to their advice. All right, so now on to, you know, starting a business. Oh, one more thing. So a word of caution on business books. Business books, and I've read some, are interesting. They all have something good in them that you can, you know, pull out. But don't subscribe to another one in a long line of bullshit fads of like, oh, like right now, like lean startup is cool, or oh, like business plan canvassing is like a thing. And it's like, learn about them, take out what's good, but like don't make that your bag. Like, you know, like, it's all bullshit. Like, none of this stuff matters. Business has been business forever. There's no like breakout fucking like methodology that's gonna be the difference between your failure and your success. You just have to not do stupid shit and you'll be fine. If you work hard and like have a good plan, just don't fuck it up. You don't need business books to do that kind of stuff. So Jesse likes to say this all the time. What your job is when you start a company or a business is just like a scientific test. Your job is to prove that your original hypothesis is valid. Do a controlled test. Observe what happens. Update your hypothesis and keep doing it. That's what your business is going to be like from day one to the last day you're in business. It's literally continuously about, okay, so here's what we think is going to happen. All right, change this and put that there. All right, this is what we think is going to happen based on that and change it. You're continuously doing this, like, test. And you want to design good tests. So you want to do things in a lean way. You know what I mean? You want to do it as fast as possible, as efficiently as possible, as far as resources go and all that. So why do we have, switching, I'm very specific when I use the word business and company, because they're different things. Why do we have companies, right? Why do we have the structure? And I'm not talking about like an LLC or a C Corp or whatever. I'm talking about, why do we organize ourselves this way? And there's a reason. Over time, this is kind of like what's evolved through centuries of like business happening and commerce and trading, whatever. This is actually the most efficient way to structure a group of people trying to make money. That's what a company is for. There's a reason that there's business plans and accounting and you know, a corporate structure, and like this person's responsible for making these decisions. So don't try to reinvent the wheel. It's been fucking tested for centuries and it works. You need to follow these things. You have to do these things, even though sometimes they might not seem critical, like having a business plan. So, like, is your business plan really important? No. But is it important for you to do a business plan? Yes. Because you have to put your ideas on paper and look them over so that you can see you're not kind of inside your own head and dreaming about this business. At the same time, the reason why you have business plans or accounting is literally, the reason is to be able to share large amounts of information really easily. So if you can't put your ideas on a piece of paper or collect your financials and your spending in a standard accounting format, it means you're doing something wrong and you need to adjust for it. So it's important to do all these things, even though they might seem tedious or not important to making money. So another thing that Robbie mentioned you wanted me to talk about was fundings. It's an area that I'm hesitant to talk about a little bit, because a lot of people think about funding being an important part of doing your business. And as I mentioned, I raised $50 million for my own company. I've probably been a part of another $60 million of raising for other companies that I've either been on the board of or worked with. So I've seen all different types of capital raises. So what's called capital structure, and that means how you raise money, how you spend your, how you have access to capital and liquidity for the shareholders, capital structure. So we're talking about everything from like debt to like IPO type stuff. Capital structure is probably the most important part of any business that's growing. The most successful entrepreneurs in the world have always, literally any one of them, have figured out a way to make capital structure be a benefit to them rather than, oh, it's like this thing I have to figure out. They've literally used it to their benefit. So,
could you give an example?
Yeah. I okay, so do you know Steve Wynn is?
The Wynn.
Yeah. Yes. So Steve Wynn has been in the hotel business forever, right? His co-founder or partner was a man named Michael Milken. If you live in LA, you've probably seen like Milken things. Milken is like a billionaire dude, finance guy, older dude. He's actually in jail right now for like some sort of financial corruption thing that he did.
Is that the junk bonds?
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
He's in jail again because he.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
Oh, is he out?
Jail in the '80s or nineties, didn't he?
No, he went to jail like in the 2000s. I think.
Oh, okay.
I think I thought he was still in, or he might be out. But yeah, same guy. Same guy.
Okay.
There's a cool book on that.
What's the name of that book again?
It was an interesting read. I'll pull it up. Anyways,
go on. So Michael Milken literally taught Steve Wynn capital structure. Here's how it works. These are guys out there in like Vegas. They're like, you know, they have money, right? Like hundreds of millions of dollars, but it's not the same as having a capital structure. So all these guys are like, you know, hoteliers and gambling people and nightclub people who are in this industry, which Steve Wynn was one of. But this guy, Michael Milken, literally taught Steve Wynn how to access capital through capital markets and how to have a good capital structure. So throughout the history of Las Vegas, there's been really low points. And there's actually another really low point a couple of years ago. But throughout this time, because Wynn had access to every single property in Vegas has been like touched by Steve Wynn. Like, fuck, it's not just the Wynn hotels
he
and whatever.
The Bellagio, the MGM,
the Bellagio,
Mirage,
Bally, Caesars, mm-hmm. Caesars. He's owned like all these hotels at one point. And the reason for that is because of capital structure. He figured out how to do capital structure the right way. He had access to capital markets. He had people in Wall Street who fucking structured bonds for him or whatever.
So, sorry, I feel like I'm missing like a crucial understanding of
sure.
What the hell is capital structure.
Capital structure is the way that your company is set up to access money. So raising money through angel investors would be capital structure, the capital structure
it's,
of...
So it's basically like the process of how to get money.
It's the process, but it's a structure. So I'll explain. Like, I go to you and I say, "Yo, Jason, I'm gonna start this company. Here's what it's gonna be like. I need $1 million from you. But here's what we're gonna do, and I might need another $1 million in 6 months. And okay, so you're gonna give me the second million if I need it, or you know, the plan is I have a bank loan that I can get at that point, and like what it's the roadmap of like what you're gonna do when you run out of money, when you need to borrow money, when you need to raise more capital. It's the entire structure of that.
Okay. Because the idea is you don't want to get too much money.
No, the idea is that you might need money at some point.
Okay.
And what happens is when you need money and you don't have it, you go out of business. And a guy like Michael Wynn goes to Wall Street and gets a few $100 million through a bond he structures and buys your hotels from you. Steve Wynn literally wrote in his book, I remember, like, he's like, capital structure is the only reason that he's successful. Like, everything, all his success is based off of capital structure.
Well, Doug, people like Genevieve, she goes, he's so successful because he's got pretty shit in his hotel.
Nope. It's like Instagram filters.
What's the difference between like a good capital structure and bad capital structure? Just the fact that...
That's a great question.
You thought ahead?
It's two parts. It's so you have to plan for every occasion. That goes from you run out of money, you find an amazing opportunity. I want to buy that fucking hotel across the street. I want to buy this company. Having access to capital to do that. So planning for every scenario, that's one part. The second part is having great relationships with the people that you're getting money from. If I need more cash or whatever, you can come back to them. Or I can't make a payment on this. Can you work with us? They have to really believe in your business, that sort of stuff. It happens even in non-personal relationships. You know, the people who buy Apple stock are fucking Apple fanboys. They love it. Like, they're not going to sell because, like, they're not going to sell their shares because, the iWatch sucks. You know what I mean? They're going to hold on to it, right? So that kind of capital structure, that kind of relationship is important in capital structure. The thing about this is that if you don't, it's like a catch-22. If you don't already know about capital structures and funding and how to raise money, you shouldn't do it. You shouldn't plan on it. You shouldn't try to start a business that requires raising money. But it's kind of the chicken before the egg thing where it's like, well, then how does anyone start doing this? And the answer is that you don't start doing it for yourself. You start doing it with other people, get to know people who've done it. You learn about, I could sit here and explain to you the intricacies of like how a fundraising round works and like the way the note is structured and all this shit, but it's useless to you guys unless you're actually doing that. It's actually better to learn about the general landscape rather than the specific. And if you think you want to start a business that needs money, then you want to start learning more about these things and going in these directions. But the big point I'm making is that you don't want to start a business or think about starting businesses that require raising money if you don't know how to raise money.
Can I just touch on that?
Sure.
I had a unique perspective on this that I think that you may want to consider. When I started my business, me and my co-founder brought on a third partner to become the chair of our board who had raised billions of dollars for startup companies. And this was a strategic move that we made to with two college kids had no idea how to raise money other than ask family members for money. You know, this guy came in and strategically asked favors of guys that he had done with other deals to start, putting in our angel investments. We've raised, over the past 3 years, $1 million. We're going out for another $1 million raise. That's not because I know how to raise money. I've learned over the past 3 years how to go in and pitch that.
And next time you can do it on
your own. Agreed, because I had
someone to
kind of like help me through it, understand how to make a deck, a certain way that, guys are going to take it seriously and it's not some, far off reach and showing your insecurities or whatever within your business. It's a very long process, and I've had 3 to 4 years of experience of it, but it was because I made that choice to give up equity in my company, appoint a chair who had that experience to make sure that now, when I go to my next business, now I can do it. I can do it for other people too, but I gave some of my company to him to do that.
So how did you find that person?
I was lucky. It was my co-founder's father. But like in most scenarios, before you're even raising it, you should be looking for that kind of like lead person on the board, that chair to start that whole process. I think it would be
if you go down that rabbit hole of thinking and learning about this kind of stuff, you find people who know about it. I mean, you just met two people that could theoretically help you if you needed it.
And as far as raising money goes, I worked for a private equity firm right out of college. We raised $2.5 million for 10 different companies, and they all failed.
So, yeah.
But I did learn a shitload about raising money.
Is that why you're not in private equity anymore?
Yeah.
Shot.
Well, that's not the main reason. The main reason is because I fucking hated it.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Private equity is like, I could like do a talk on like the different types of Wall Street people too at one point. But anyway, so private equity is actually very fucking cutthroat like segment in Wall Street. Okay, so again, you want to start with keeping in mind whenever you're thinking about this, whether it's in your deck or when you have your business idea to pitch or whatever, why do people invest in companies? Yes. All this bullshit you hear, like they believe in the people, the idea has to be good, all these things are ancillary. The only thing that matters is that you're going to make them money. And
they to a sound investor, you know, you
to
you
a can, real investor, yeah, not to your parents, you can pick or off your uncle,
friends and like, families with like passion projects, like yeah. And I urge you to do so because that's that low hanging fruit. But the point of making is
your family's gonna hate you.
Probably. I'm mad at me for a while.
Yeah, for you, for sure.
Okay, so the landscape, the spectrum of. Kind of like what's in capital markets. On one end, you have angel investors. Then you have VCs. Then you have private equity. Then comes public markets. And then investment bankers kind of are, they can play in any of these areas. So I'll kind of walk you through kind of what each one of, what the business of each one of these people is. So angel investors, people tend to call like those people who get money from their like parents and stuff or whatever. Angel investors, they're not really angel investors. An angel investor is a professional who invests money in very early stage companies with the expectation, obviously, that they're taking the highest risk and they're going to have the highest return out of anybody in this spectrum. That doesn't mean that they're, you know, willing to give everyone money. They're still will scrutinize you. You may or may not need to have a product ready. You may or may not need to, you know, already have revenue or traction. But, you know, it's different. Depends on the type of opportunity. One step above that is venture capitalists, and people always have a hard time describing what the difference is between a venture capitalist and an angel investor, but I think I can explain it to you really succinctly. Angel investors predict winners and venture capitalists identify winners. What that means is that VCs are not in the business of predicting if this is a good company or a good idea. A venture capitalist come in when they already see that the company is growing at a rapid pace, and they want to tag along with that growth, usually investing significant amounts of money with significant less risk than angel investors. But they also don't make as much, you know, an angel investor might make 100 plus times their money. A VC might make 20 times their money. So the VCs are only interested in identifying a winner, someone that's already making money and growing. Private equity is especially interesting for people who are not interested in these kind of like tech startup businesses. Private equity companies focus on buying both public and private companies either completely or partially. They usually are looking at betting on an industry. A private equity company might say, like, we think this type of healthcare businesses are hot right now. Let's buy up as much stock or ownership in, you know, MRI technology companies as possible. And that'll be like an initiative. Probably not something that you'd have to deal with in the early stages of business, something that might happen later on. A lot of companies get acquired by private equity firms. It's one of those kind of like options for exit, like where you've got like a competitor or going public or whatever. But private equity companies often buy businesses outright too, and they roll them up is what they usually do.
Is there any reason why you would like go to a private equity firm and have they acquire you without trying to exit? Like, what would be the benefit of?
What do you mean?
Like, why wouldn't you exit after that you got bought?
I don't understand what you mean.
You just said that private equity firms oftentimes buy a company outright.
Yeah.
And then that's one way to have the exit strategy.
Yeah.
Is there any cases where someone would stay at the company?
When I say exit, I mean sell the company.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you will probably, it depends on the deal, whether you stay or not. Sometimes people have to stay, sometimes they don't. But yeah, when I say exit, I mean, thanks for pointing that out, because I use it, like, maybe everyone knows what that means. Exit means sell the company. Different ways of selling the company. Public markets, obviously IPOs, selling stock. And then investment bankers are basically just people who, for a percentage of your company and of cash, usually both, will raise money for you from other people. And the last thing, exits. If you're lucky enough to get here, there's a lot of people that can help you. Reach out for help, ask questions. You're probably going to hire investment bankers. You're probably going to hire lawyers that are specialists in the sale of a business. There's only one piece of advice I can give you. If you think you're building a business that you want to exit one day, just make sure that from day one, things like accounting, bank accounts, all that kind of shit is done very cleanly and correctly, and you keep all your documents, you have proper legal documents with yourself and your co-founders and blah, blah, blah. Because later on, it will bite you in the ass. That's it. If you guys have questions or stuff like that, I'm happy to answer any of them.
Obviously, I understand what you're saying. I want to build something. Based on technology. I guess I'm not articulating myself very well, but figuring out where to start is always the hardest challenge. Where should you start?
So, I'm not sure how you think about this, but it sounds to me you might be one of those people who just wants to start a business for no reason. You feel like you have a need to have a company or a business. What's in your head, but it sounds like you might be going that way. So my advice to you is, if that is true, stop thinking about that.
Yeah.
One, and then two, start thinking about being open and aware and observant of possible opportunities. And don't force yourself to come up with one as fast as possible. You're lucky enough because you're here and you have a great job and all that stuff that you don't have to fucking come up with a hustle today. Don't force yourself to like jump into the first thing that comes to mind. Be prudent with like picking a good opportunity.
Yeah, the only reason this inner confidence was started was because for fun I was trying to be better with chicks, met these guys that were doing it in San Francisco, Pickup 101, worked for them for a little while, and I saw there was a need in the market. There were really two types of companies that were offering these services. There were like these pickup artist weirdos, and then there was these really spiritual, it's all about how you feel sort of people. So you had this huge gap in the middle of guys who were just normal guys like me, who wanted to get better with chicks, who didn't want to wear fuzzy hats, who didn't want to go and meet like spiritual fucking meditation yogis that just wanted to improve their life, and that shit didn't exist. So that's why I started IC. And there was a bunch of guys that I met through Pickup 101 that I basically just grabbed as clients. So I had that platform. I wasn't just sitting around thinking like, oh yeah, let's start a company and teach guys how to pick up bitches. Like, there was a
exactly.
It was a clear need.
At the beginning, you mentioned that it's important to surround yourself with people that know more than you. How did you do that, and what tips do you have for doing that?
First you want to know what type of people you want to know. What type of like subject matter experts do you want to know? Networking and all that stuff is good. You should do that because it's like a good in and of itself, like meeting interesting people and talking to people, building your network, your social circles. But I mean, there's been many times in my life where I've reached out to friends and been like, yo, I'm looking for someone who's an expert on like blah, blah, blah. Do you know anybody who knows about that? I, you know, want to, and many times I'll be like, oh, yo, like, I mean, Jesse's done this for me for two or three times. Like, you know, Amir, meet this guy. He's the head of, you know, AdWords at Google, whatever. And it's like, hey, can we have coffee next week? Like, I just want to pick your brain and whatever. And most of these people, if you're not an idiot, like, will talk to you. I also developed some mentorship relationships when I was in college, which were really critical to a lot of the stuff that I did. And people always, the immediate question after I tell them about who my mentors were and like what they did, because they're all like kind of really important people and each of them gave me different pieces of advice. How do you find a mentor, right? Like is the natural question. And it's kind of, you know, open-ended, depends. It really depends. You want to get to know that person. You want to make sure that they kind of want to be your mentor. There's been times where I've asked the person outright, like, yo, can you mentor me, like, on this? Like, I need your help. Like, I want to meet with you, like, once a week to learn about this. And then there's been people that, like, it's never been called a mentorship relationship, but, like, literally every Tuesday we met for lunch for, like, a year, and I just fucking picked the guy's brain or told him about what's going on. So those type of relationships are key, because those are usually with people who know more than you about something, and by that, you know, they know other people that you can talk to for like subject matter information. Mentors are great.
So there are a few ideas I have that I feel like is a really long pain. I would like to build a product for it, but I don't really necessarily want to build like a whole huge company ideally. Or is that because?
No, that's awesome, actually.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, for sure. So, if you have a business idea, something that can make money, it doesn't have to have a company behind it. A company is necessary when you want to do the things that a company does. But if you've got like, okay, I'll put it this way: like, you realize somehow that like having Airbnb houses is like a great idea to make some cash. You don't need to build a company to do that, like Jesse did. You can just go rent a couple of houses and you know whatever. So if you've got like a hustle or something like where, oh, I can just like sell some of this stuff, or I can put up this, you know, website that collects $5 every time someone hits this button or whatever, you don't need to make a company around that.
Yeah, it's crazy. My buddy, he was in the music space, and he has now transitioned out to create this passive income. He changed his whole mentality of buying a certain item in bulk from China and putting it on Amazon and just owning Amazon. And there's a lot of strategy in it, and he did his research for a year, and right now he's doing meal prep containers and branding it in a cool way and then putting it on Amazon as the sole distribution channel for it. And he's going to make a shit ton of money. Like the amount of man work that he wants to put into it, it now is like self-sufficient where he can go on long vacations, he can do whatever he wants, and he's going to do that with more and more products that are relevant at the time on Amazon.
I mean, I'll give you an example of what I think what you're talking about that I did myself. When I stopped working at my company at Equimetrics, I started hanging around Newmont's pharma company office like a lot, like the first month, because like I had nothing to fucking do. So he was like, yo, like Newmont's company spends over $2 million a year on FedEx because they ship all this stuff around the world. And by the way, they also have 70% off of the list prices, and they still spend $2 million a year. So he's like, yeah, you know, FedEx has this like thing where like if they deliver the packages late, or like sometimes the weight isn't the right size, or blah, 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 like we have to audit the shipping records, but there's like thousands of packages a day that go out. But if somebody audited this stuff, FedEx owes us money. We get refunds or whatever. And you have to, FedEx actually knows they owe the refund, but they make you request the refund yourself from this like website. So he's like, Amir, can you figure out a way to like do this with software? And I'm like, sure. So for like about 3 weeks, I sat there and I like made a program that downloaded off of FedEx's site every record every day, like the list. It checked it against a bunch of parameters. There's like 15 different reasons you could get a refund. And then I built another program that took the information from that program, like of what to submit as requests, and then would submit the requests. And we got about 20 to 25% of his monthly bill refunded to us. And he's like, this is awesome. He's like, this is great. You can have half the money. He's like, from now on, whatever we get a refund, you can have half the money. And he's like, because I wasn't working anymore, right? And like, he's my friend. He's like, you should just take this and start a company and go sell this to everyone else. So I thought about doing that. I was like, oh, okay, so here's the thing. It could just be a hustle like this, or I could go make it a company. I thought about it, and I tried to kind of explore making it into a company, but I ended up not wanting to make it a company. I ended up just letting it be this little hustle. And over the course of like 2 years now, I've sold it to three other businesses. I gave them the exact same deal that Newmon has, where I take 50% of the revenue. The software just runs on itself. I actually have to just audit the software once a month to send them a bill. The only reason I have to deal with the software is that I have to bill them for how much they owe. That's not a business. There's no website. It doesn't even have a fucking name. I just built it. I have it. I randomly... There's a very, very, very few companies that need this kind of stuff who do this type of shipping, this volume of shipping. But they're not Amazon, who, like, you know, doesn't need to worry about getting refunds from fucking FedEx or whatever. So, but it's a great little business. It makes me a ton of... I could probably just, you know, do that all the time and it'd be fine. But, like, I didn't want to make it a business. I didn't want to make it a company. Sorry, I didn't want to make it a company.
It didn't keep you up at night.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, that's awesome. People should be thinking more of ideas like that than fucking trying to start companies they want to fucking sell.
Like Jesse's the king of fucking hustles.
Yes. Yeah.
Hustle, 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 and some of those become a business.
So I don't know if this is related, but I've also heard a lot of, like, how to protect yourself legally around, like, companies and stuff like that, so that, like, you know, if something goes wrong, like, you're not liable, stuff like that, but...
It's pretty overrated, like, okay, thinking about that kind of stuff. You really only need to worry about that if you're doing something, like, really, really high risk. People tend to be more worried about, like, NDAs and, like, all this bullshit, like, early on when they've never done it. I mean, it's an immediate sign of, like, this guy doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about. Like,
and we joked about it in LA when, like, dude, like, wouldn't, like, talk on an NDA, and he requested talking to Amir for, like, his time. You're like, fuck you up.
I fucking, like, got into an argument with a guy. Like, I meet, like, 3 or 4 people a week who are, like, interested in, like, you know, building technology or raising money or whatever. And, like, this guy wanted me to sign an NDA. And I'm like, dude, I'm not signing your NDA. Tell me what you can tell me about your company without an NDA. And if it's interesting to me, at some point I'll sign an NDA. I'm not signing an NDA. I don't even know you. Like, I was like, you're creating a legal obligation for me that, like, is going to last past this fucking 5-minute phone call we're gonna have. Like, and anyway, but the point is, that shit's all bullshit. That's for fucking losers. That's for people who fucking, you know, don't know what they're doing.
It's like people who go out and spend a shitload of money on their business card.
Yeah.
Before, like, even having a business.
What about like, tax implications or anything like that? Do you worry about that?
Taxes are important for people who make money. Until you make money, and I mean, like, significant amounts of money, don't worry about, like, tax structure or whatever. That's good. Cool. I hope that was helpful.
That was good. Yeah. I've never heard of any of this stuff before. So this is all really, really interesting shit.
Really awesome shit, for sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. No problem.